This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we have updates, updates, updates. The latest on the Charlie Guerin CPS lawsuit. Also, Attorney General Paxton has issued a ruling on the legality of these culture of voting resolutions. You also hear about one statewide candidate who's campaigning for a liberal lawmaker. We'll sit down and talk with Vance Ginn from Texas Public Policy Foundation about the governor's new property tax reform proposal. And we'll end with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan saying, "Hey, Congressman, do your job." Welcome back, friends, to the 1836 Studios. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, and this is Texas Scorecard Radio. As I promised at the top of the program, we've got updates this week. I've got an update for you on the Charlie Guerin, Beau French CPS lawsuit. As listeners may recall, we had Mr. Beau French in as a guest on the program about a month or so ago, and he told us about what really is the dirtiest political attack that we've ever seen in Texas politics. Allegedly, a campaign operative for State Representative Charlie Guerin, this is during the last primary in 2016, made a phony phone call to Child Protective Services alleging child abuse in the French family. And it led to months and months of investigations. And obviously, French was cleared. There was no truth to it. But nonetheless, he was subjected to this horrible attack. I have an update on that story up at texasscorecard.com. I'd encourage listeners to go read the entire thing, but the gist of it is this. David Sorensen, the Democratic political operative who was working for Guerin during the last primary, is trying to put off answering questions about the lawsuit. He's trying to put that off, not just for a little while, but until after the Republican primary in March. It looks like if he's trying to do that, he may very well have something to hide that he is trying to not answer in order to protect his former boss. So I'd encourage listeners to go to the website and check that update out. And now for the news. First up, we've got Zach Maxwell. Zach, you and I have been talking over the past few weeks about this culture of voting resolution, an effort being pushed by Texas Educators Vote and the Texas Association of School Boards to try to use public resources in schools for electioneering. And apparently Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has ruled that some of that stuff may be illegal. Tell us about it.
That's right. So Senator Paul Bettencourt actually asked Attorney General Paxton to offer up a legal opinion on whether or not the culture of voting resolution being pushed by tax-funded Texas Association of School Boards, was legal or not. And so he actually said that busing students and teachers to the polling places actually does not serve a public purpose and said violates Article 3, Section 52A of the Texas Constitution. In addition to that, some of the actions may be unconstitutional under the Texas Election Code 11.169, which prohibits electioneering by school districts, and then also 255.03A, which makes it a Class A misdemeanor for abuse of public funds for political advertising.
Yeah, and so we've got the Texas Association of School Boards and some of these liberal advocacy groups basically pushing teachers to go out and break the law and do things with public resources for electioneering purposes that are very clearly against state statute. Got an article up. TexasScorecard.com has all of this stuff from Attorney General Paxton's opinion. But I guess you're going to be out there keeping an eye open to see if these guys are defiant. There's some suggestion that they're just not going to care.
That's right. We've been sending open records requests to many school districts across the state. And if any of our listeners out there see anything suspicious or hear about anything, let us know.
Yeah, no. Well, I look forward to seeing more reports. I don't think this is the end of the story, but it is clear from Attorney General Paxton's opinion that a lot of this stuff being proposed is against the law. So we'll have to keep a close eye on it. Thank you for that report, Zach. Next, we'll turn to Brandon Walton's Capital Bureau Chief with Texas Scorecard. Brandon, you've got an article up about this, and it's an interesting story. I've been around campaigns and politics, and, you know, it's an interesting thing. Whenever somebody's running for office, they're always really hesitant to put their name, put themselves out there endorsing another candidate. But we've got one of the statewide candidates going and endorsing a liberal lawmaker. Tell us about it.
Yes, exactly. So, of course, the primary elections are only a few weeks away with the early voting, and it's interesting to see how candidates are spending their time. You know, are they out there courting conservatives? What are they doing? It seems like Land Commissioner George P. Bush, who's running for re-election, decided to spend his weekend last Saturday out block walking with liberal state rep Jason Villalba up in Dallas.
Yeah, so Villalba, one of the most liberal Republican lawmakers in the legislature. What are some of the greatest hits?
Oh, so did
from
the
Villalba.
Rodeo clown. I mean, just recently he called for gun control, a commission to study that. He's, of course, been on both sides of Obamacare, very anti-privacy legislation the last special session. Was voted in our best worst list as one of the top 10 worst legislators in the state house last session.
And yet, George P. Bush, he's got a four-way primary for his second term as land commissioner, is out here campaigning for re-election. But part of his campaign for re-election is, hey, let's have a family?
They call family block walk. We got pizza. We're going to block walk.
With Jason Villalba. Seems a little tone deaf, I think, is if nothing else, very, very tone deaf.
Exactly. And of course, Representative Villalba has his own problems he's facing. Lisa Luby Ryan up in Dallas, who announced on her most recent finance report that she had more than 3.5 times as much cash on hand as he did. George P. Bush should hope he doesn't find himself in the same situation.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on it. And thank you for keeping an eye out for us, Brandon.
Texas
thank
Scorecard you. Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At TexasScorecard.com or EmpowerTexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at EmpowerTexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome on the program this week Dr. Vance Ginn, PhD in economics and director of the Center for Economic Prosperity at Texas Public Policy Foundation. Vance, great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, I wanted to have you on to talk about the governor is out with a new property tax reform proposal, and y'all were out saying it's a good thing. So tell us what's so good about what Governor Abbott is proposing.
Yeah, so for far too long, we've heard from Texans all across this great state saying, you know what, my property taxes keep going up, and really no fault of my own, can't afford it anymore, we've got to do something about this. And the legislatures tried, some of the legislature anyway, have tried to do that for a while.
Right.
And it's great to hear that the governor's coming out in support of a 2.5% revenue cap, which is basically a trigger that if the revenue would increase by more than 2.5%, then the elected officials, imagine this, would actually have to go to the voters and make their case of why they would need property revenue, tax revenue, to go above 2.5%. And we think that's a great day for Texans, and hopefully to slow the growth rate of property taxes so they can own their home and not be pushed out along the way.
Yeah, and this is something that we've seen a lot of legislative fights over the last, particularly this last legislative session and going into this. And Texas has these certain caps, rollback rate caps, things that are really based in the reality, how much revenue is coming in from the same properties. You know, it's not a nominal rate thing. It's like really how much money is coming out of Texans' pockets.
Yep.
And the governor's coming in with a pretty aggressive number here, saying 2.5%, and then you would have to go off and get voter approval.
Yeah, that's right. And so today the automatic rollback rate is 8%, right? And that was said a while back when we were having high levels of inflation and property growth of more than 8% back in the 1970s,
right?
The period of the great inflation, right? And now with inflation being pretty low, 2%, population growth right around 2%, we're saying, hey, let's keep government from growing faster than the means of taxpayers. And so one way to look at it is, you know, 2.5% a year, that seems to be right in that range of population growth and inflation. And so that way, hopefully, people will have more money in their pocket, put food on the table, save for a rainy day or whatever else it may be. The big thing here is just liberty. Let them have the flexibility of what to do with their money instead of the government taking so much from them.
Live their lives. Give it away.
Yeah.
You know, give it away to charity or if you want to do something other than spend it or save it. Well, you wanted to talk a little bit about the situation we've seen with property taxes in Texas. You know, their Center for Economic Prosperity at TPPF, y'all are kind of experts at looking at what are the things that are interfering with people's lives, right? You know, kind of getting in the way of people living their lives. How is government an impediment? One of the ways, biggest ways in Texas is certainly property taxes and property tax increases. Tell us a little bit about how things have been changing over the last, you know, decade, two decades, you know, since that time back in the 70s. What have we seen here in the state that's kind of warranting these reforms?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, Tony. And what we've seen in Texas is that if you look over time, from 2000 to 2013, property taxes went up 101%. If you look over the last two decades, it's up 200%. And when you compare it to just population growth and inflation, which have increased 70%, I mean, that's a substantial increase compared with population inflation, the means of taxpayers' ability to pay. And so what we're thinking about here is that is a huge barrier for people to be able to satisfy their desires, just live their life from day to day, spend time with their family, and things of that nature. And so what we're saying is, look, let's reduce the growth rate of property tax revenue over time. We need to have some way to fund essential roles of government. And I think maybe we can get into that a little bit later on the spending side. But property taxes are just going up too much. And so when you look at property taxes and say, okay, how is this a barrier? Well, it's a barrier for me being able to eventually own my own home because I just can't continue to pay for it. And especially it hurts those that are on fixed income and those with limited means. I mean, some people that are out there can afford the high property taxes, but in other areas, let's say East Austin, where you have gentrification going on,
That's right.
And then you have the situation where some of these lower income people and others higher income people moving in as well, increasing the demand for housing, pushing up the prices. And oftentimes the property tax liability ends up being more than the mortgage payment itself.
Wow.
And that's just ridiculous, right? Yeah. And something needs to be done about that. And so we think about, well, what services are we actually providing for those dollars? What government services? And are they being done the most efficiently and effective possible? And when we look at that, we say, well, no, there's a lot of bureaucratic bloat that's in government itself.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people out there feel the property tax hit, and they know, man, I'm being priced out of my home. This isn't right. But you know, it's good to see that there are numbers out there that verify it's not just a feeling; it's a fact that these things are going up. And you're right. You know, you think about these areas like East Austin. It's almost as if high property taxes are a tool or a weapon. To drive out residents, and then you know developers come in and do things with the property. There's a constituency for these high taxes, not just the people benefiting from the government benefits, but from high taxes themselves, and using those to force people out of their homes so they can come in and buy. So it's interesting to watch that. Well, so the governor's out and he's saying, look, we want to have a 2.5% cap on property tax growth year over year, which we're still just talking about limiting the growth. We're not talking about turning anything back. And even if that, we're saying just let the voters decide. I mean, it's amazing to watch these people, these local government officials, throw their hands in the air and say, oh, my gosh, this is the end of the world if we have to go ask our voters for approval to raise taxes. It really kind of makes you question, well, we all know they really don't support these tax increases. But we need to be thinking about something more. What can be done? I mean, is it feasible that we could turn the clock back, reduce the property, not limit the increases, but reduce property taxes and possibly eliminate property taxes? What say you on that issue?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you hit it on the head. I mean, this is really just slowing the growth. And what that then assumes is that the base with which we're taxing today is the right base. And we think it should be a lot less. Just when you compare it with simple metrics like population and inflation, it's substantially higher than the growth rate in those just over the last decade. And, you know, there are more than 4,100 taxing jurisdictions, local taxing jurisdictions for property taxes across the state of Texas. And, you know, just in Round Rock, where I live, there are six. And so it makes it very difficult for me to be able to go to the city, to the county, you know, there's the Austin Community College and so forth, each one of those, and determine, okay, well, what's their budget? How much is it going to be? And what's the growth rate? And to make sure that there are clear checks and balances, it's very difficult. And some of the research that we've done here at the Texas Public Policy Foundation over time is to try to figure out, okay, how can we eliminate property taxes altogether? And one way to do that could be to swap it with a higher sales tax. Basically, sure. Say, hey, let's eliminate a burdensome property tax system and put in place a sales tax that could be more efficient, allow people to have flexibility of what they want to do with their incomes. And what we found is if you were able to eliminate all the property taxes, which is a little bit more than $50 billion a year that's brought in, and you kept the same sales tax base, which the sales tax rate, the state's rate is 6.25%, and the local governments can add up to 2%, so that's the 8.25%. You would basically need to about double the sales tax rate. We understand that's just not economically competitive. Right. I mean, we'd have the highest sales tax in the nation. Right now, Louisiana has it at about 10%. So it'd be pretty high at about, you know, 16%. Some other research we looked at was saying, okay, if you expanded the base to include services that are taxed in one other state and include the transfer of property, that would bring you in at about 11%. So that wouldn't be a huge increase, but it would still give us the highest there. And you have your political interest groups, right, who are not going to like taxing more services or taxing the transfer of property. So it makes it somewhat difficult to do, but our research shows that would actually make us more have more prosperity over time. Another approach that we're looking at is to actually buy down property taxes, the school district portion. So you look at property taxes overall, about 50% of our property tax burden statewide comes from the school districts. And even on locals, I mean, in Round Rock as well, about 50% is the school district. Then you have your cities, counties, and special purpose districts. So if we were able to buy down the state, the school district portion of maintenance and operations over time using surplus dollars that the state had, so basically, you could increase the amount of funding by the state to buy down the local property tax on school districts to where over time you could eliminate that portion entirely. And if you look at historical growth rates and revenue, we could do that in about 10 to 12 years. Now, what that would also have to entail are some sort of spending limits, which is the key driver of taxes, both at the state level to have a more restrictive spending limit, and at the local level, which the governor does here, looking at the revenue cap. And so I think by doing this, with, you know, doing a buy down, you wouldn't have to raise the sales tax. And that's kind of a good part of that as well. So there are options out there, but I still think you hit on the nail on the head is that this just slows the growth rate. And so there needs to be some other things looked at in the process.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think you're on the right track. Ultimately, taxes are a symptom of overspending. And so if we make a declaration to say, yeah, government in Texas is big enough, well, we do enough things, let's limit it to population plus inflation growth, cap the growth of government spending, you can kind of say, well, we're going to just freeze the size of government relative to the people as it is today. Mm-hmm. And we're going to move forward on that. I think when people look around, they see too much government as it is. So it's not really too controversial to say, well, let's not make it any bigger. And if you were to do that, what you're telling us is in 10 to 12 years, you could use those funds to buy down and eliminate half the property tax bill.
Correct.
That's amazing. I think that's really an answer. And, you know, I think it's interesting. You see the propagandists out there against changing the property tax say, oh, we're going to have to go to sales tax at 25, 30% or some crazy number.
Yeah.
And it isn't that. No, you know, it's high. It would be 16. But even better than that is let's limit the growth of government and push that surplus into relief.
Exactly. And that way every dollar that goes to property tax cut is essentially a dollar that stays in the pocket of Texas families.
Yeah, I think that's a winner for everybody. Well, thank you for your work, Vance. Thank you for coming on the program and giving us an update about the governor's proposal and y'all's work. Tell listeners, where can they learn more about the work you're doing there at the Center for Economic Prosperity?
They can go to texaspolicy.com. They can also follow us on Twitter at TPPF or me at Vance Ginn, VanceGinn.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll have to have you back to talk about, you know, there's a ton of issues y'all cover, and y'all really are the best experts here in the state. So thank you for coming on.
I'd love to be on again, Tony. Have a great day.
You too. For this week's On the Trail segment, we're again talking to Carrie Cheshire out with the Texas Scorecard team going across the state. You started off in the Panhandle. The last time we talked to you, you were in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Now you're down in the Bayou City. Tell us about the races that are going on down there in Houston.
You know, starting off down in Brazoria County, down on the Texas coast, down around Angleton and Lake Jackson, checking in with Damon Rambo, a pastor who's running against Dennis Bonin, the Speaker pro tempore of the Texas House, and kind of one of the biggest barriers for property tax reform.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, you know, Bonin has been a big opponent of property tax reform. Rambo, you know, getting a lot of notoriety because of his name, Rambo in the House. It's kind of this exciting thing. But he's got a real campaign going on down there.
That's absolutely right, Tony. He's knocked on about 3,500 doors himself. He's got an active and aggressive campaign team going out all across the district. And really, he's making a difference. You know, kind of a lot of Republican primary voters, a lot of Republican voters believe in term limits. And they've got somebody who's been in office for almost two decades in Dennis Bonin right now. And it's just something, you know, I think most Texans' property taxes have probably increased over the past 20 years. I think most Texans would say that there's a lot of good that you can accomplish in 20 years. But most Texans would not think that you need to be in government for 20 years.
Right.
I mean,
right.
the whole status of the Texas Constitution with a part-time legislature is that it's supposed to be part-time.
Yeah, not a career sort of thing. Tell us about the next one.
That's right. So now we're going to my home district, Mays Middleton in Galveston and Chambers County. Really, you know, kind of conservative businessman running up against somebody who came into office promising to be a conservative. I know my parents voted for him. I know other people in the community voted for Wayne Faircloth, really to dispatch a Democrat, Craig Island. And he really just hasn't lived up to expectations. Mays Middleton, a true believer, a very aggressive campaigner. You know, his campaign has knocked on over 23,000 doors. That's something that you
see more at congressional 23,000 doors?
He's absolutely getting after it. He's one of the Texas House primary challengers who's been endorsed by Governor Greg Abbott. And really just a big tidal wave of conservative support for Mays Middleton down in Chambers County and in Galveston.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the other race that Governor Abbott has gotten involved in, the Sarah Davis-Susanna DocuPill race. How's that one going?
So that one's a really interesting race, Tony. You know, Sarah Davis, the most liberal Republican in the Texas House, a more liberal Republican than even some Democrats are liberal on the Texans for Fiscal Responsibility Index. You know, scoring 2 points less than some Democrats, being challenged in the Republican primary, being supported, being advocating against in the Republican primary by Governor Greg Abbott, who's rallied behind Susanna DocuPill. A lot of conservatives here in this little kind of slice of western Harris County, you know, kind of composed of Rice Village, Montrose, and West University Place. And it's been a very interesting thing to watch it unfold. You know, a lot of people think that Sarah Davis, a liberal Republican, is the only Republican that can win this district. But that's fundamentally untrue. Ted Cruz won it. Greg Abbott won it. Dan Patrick won it. Conservatives have won this district. And Sarah Davis campaigns as a conservative. She just doesn't legislate like one.
Yeah. And now they have an opportunity to vote for Susanna DocuPill, who's an actual true conservative Republican candidate.
True conservative Republican, somebody who's got a record of being a conservative Republican, working with Greg Abbott while he was Attorney General, working with Ted Cruz while he was Solicitor General, a very credentialed and conservative lawyer in her own right, and running a really aggressive campaign.
Now, last one I want to hear about the Emily Cook race to the east of Houston. Tell us about that.
Sure. So kind of Liberty County, where kind of Liberty, Texas is, as you can imagine, a little slice of southeast Texas. We're still inside the, you know, kind of greater Houston metroplex, but really kind of behind the pines out there in Liberty and Huntsville and San Jacinto County, Emily Kibito Cook, the general counsel of Texas Right to Life, has challenged her state rep, Ernest Bales, in the Republican primary, somebody who has a terrible record on fiscal issues, scoring a disastrous F on the Fiscal Responsibility Index,
right,
and somebody who has an even worse record as it relates to the life issue.
Yeah, and so, you know, Emily's kind of doing what we all say people ought to do, step up and challenge your rep. This is a freshman rep. He's only been in the one term. He came in and he did a terrible job, and so she's out there campaigning. Tell listeners, where can they learn about all the profiles and reports that you're doing out there on the trail?
Great question, Tony. As always, you can find us on the World Wide Web, empowertexans.com/onthetrail.
Hey, Congressman, do your job. So says Michael Quinn Sullivan in this week's commentary.
Congress has lost the faith and confidence of the American people, and it seems like every day they give us fewer and fewer reasons to trust them. With the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan, and that was part of the message I delivered in testimony before the U.S. House Rules Committee recently. Congress's approval ratings are at 17%. If Congress wants to restore the legitimacy of their branch of government, they should start doing their job. And that includes defanging the administrative state. That's that faceless bureaucracy that they've allowed to run roughshod over the American people. Congress must take steps to reclaim the authority granted to them under Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution. That's the power of the purse. It's a power Congress has spent the last century gradually ceding to bureaucrats in the administrative state. But Congress must reclaim that power in a responsible way. On the one side is the unacceptable status quo, where federal agency bureaucrats are spending billions of your dollars without transparency or accountability. On the other side is the bad old days of congressional earmarks, in which politicians use their seniority to shuffle dollars to cronies back home, again, without transparency or accountability. If we're to go forward as a nation, Congress must adopt rules and practices that navigate those waters in a manner consistent with the Constitution. Congress must assert control over the bureaucrats, but they must also restrain themselves. I found members of the House fall into kind of really one of four categories. First, there's the earmark crowd. These are the folks who want to return to the bad old days of congressional earmarks so they can get cash to their districts without regard to competing priorities or needs elsewhere in the country or even national security. Next are those who defend the status quo. Sure, they'll rail against the faceless bureaucracy, but they don't want to do the work or take the political hits necessary to weigh the merits of proposals and actually vote for or against spending measures. Then there are the knee-jerkers. These folks correctly don't want earmarks. They correctly identify earmarks as immoral and inefficient. Yet their fanatical opposition to earmarks has pushed them to oppose Congress getting into the details of any federal spending. They are so fearful of doing the wrong thing that they're empowering the administrative state. Lastly, we find the constitutionalists. They recognize the federal bureaucracy won't reform itself, and even if it magically did, the Constitution demands that Congress, not the myriad of faceless agencies, departments, and offices, take charge of the spending. I'm not sure which are the most frustrating, the earmarkers or the knee-jerkers. The earmarkers are merely wrong, and they wear their wrongness on their sleeve like some badge of honor among swamp-dwelling creatures. The knee-jerkers, though, are conservatives who claim this undying fidelity to the Constitution, yet their disdain for the bad old days, or even just the stupid present days, makes them unwilling to embrace their Article I responsibilities. So this begs the most important question. Where does your member of Congress stand? Well, you should find out. Republicans currently hold a tenuous majority in the U.S. House. By taking steps this year to transparently re-engage Congress's constitutional authority over the budget, it might just be the signal that voters need that maybe, just maybe, the GOP really is finally committed to draining the swamp for the benefit of all Americans. With a Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, we've reached the end of the program. If you're catching us on the radio or on the website, I'd encourage you to go over to iTunes and hit subscribe on the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single program. But thank you for listening, and join us back here next week for more news that taxpayers need to know.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.